child is this who rang the bell, sucker? This is Movie Fighters, the show where Chris Sims and I, Matt Wilson, we watch movies and we beat them up. And everybody, it's December, which means it's time for Christmas films. And we're starting off with one that I'm not too sure about. But we talked about watching it last year, so we're having to do it this year.
Especially this is a 1 year in the making Movie Fighters rematch.
That's right. It's like John Cena versus The Rock. It's us versus Kirk Cameron's Saving Christmas, which is all the more appropriate now that we have watched every Left Behind movie.
Yeah, like that's the thing. Like, we now have a history with Kirk Cameron films. Like, we have a history with Kirk Cameron's propaganda productions.
Now, Chris,
and it's not a good history, by the way. Like, if you're just joining us, we did a solid 2 months watching all four Left Behind movies. We watched the three with Kirk Cameron, and then we watched the remake reboot starring Nicolas Cage. And was it Ian Ziering? Was it Brian Austin Green? Who was in that? It's one of those guys, right?
I don't think either one of them. I honestly,
Chad Michael Murray, maybe?
Chad Michael Murray. That's the one. That's what we did.
And now that did not go well.
It did not.
Until the third one. Left Behind 3, starring Louis Gossett Jr., was I think the one we, like, I would not call it good, but that was the one that we definitely enjoyed the most.
We had sort of given up on any kind of real enjoyment, right? So we just took what we could from that third one. Now this one, here's the good news about Saving Christmas.
It's, I think I know the good news.
It's an hour and 13 minutes long, or hour 19.
It is 79 minutes. We do not have to ruin our entire afternoon.
Yes. I don't know anything else about it. I know it's a Kirk Cameron War on Christmas movie. The poster for it, the tagline is, "Put Christ Back in Christmas." And it's Kirk Cameron coming at you, the viewer, with a giant candy cane, like he's about to smash you over the head with a candy cane, holding like a crystal ball with a nativity scene in it, while symbols of, I guess, what are supposed to be the consumerist, secular aspects of Christmas are swirling around him in a tornado, even though there is a cross behind him, too.
Okay, well, here's what I have heard about this movie, and I don't know if this is accurate. This is not the first Christmas-themed Kirk Cameron video, at least. I know there was one that was included on the Everything is Terrible big Christmas mixtape they did. It's just him talking about, you know, the true meaning of Christmas. I have heard that this movie is Kirk Cameron justifying all the secular Christmas stuff, you know, like consumerism and shopping and Christmas trees and lights, like justifying that by linking it to biblical traditions. That's what I've heard, and which sounds weird to me.
I know mostly about the reputation of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It won the Razzie for Worst Picture of 2014.
Really?
It did.
Wow. That's some stiff competition.
Its rating on IMDb is 1.6.
Oh boy. Weird because its Amazon reviews are very high.
I'll get to that in a minute. The top review on IMDb, the title is "An Interminable, Shoddily Researched Lecture Masquerading as Comedy."
Awesome.
Now, if interminable lectures are something we have come to know in Kirk Cameron movies, right?
Right. We're sinners.
Sure.
I got to say, though, Matt, interminable lectures that are shoddily researched masquerading as comedy, that's kind of what I do for a living. That's kind of if that's all 278 Ask Chris columns are that.
Well, I'm glad we have a level of self-awareness on that. Okay. It's tomato meter rating on Rotten Tomatoes is 0. Now that's only 12 reviews. Like, only 12 critics made the effort to review it. But I assume that some of those reviews are probably from, like, Christian publications, right? You would think.
Yeah, but if you'll remember, the Left Behind movies also got trashed by Christian reviewers for being insulting and poorly made. Like, I think the harshest review of the Left Behind movies that we saw came from the Christian newspaper, at least the ones that we read.
Yeah, one of the reviews that's on Rotten Tomatoes is from Common Sense Media, which, if not a Christian outlet, seems like it has to be like some kind of, at least a politically conservative kind of thing. But
I think it's Christian to Jace.
Yeah. The tomato meter is 0%. The audience score is 31%. Here's the reason for that. This is from CinemaBlend.com, an article on CinemaBlend.com. Saving Christmas had a very low, not only critics review score, but also viewer review score on Rotten Tomatoes. So Kirk Cameron started a campaign on his Facebook page to try to boost its Rotten Tomatoes rating. There was a post where he was holding up two tomatoes in a picture. He had written on the tomatoes "fresh rating," and he said, "Help me storm the gates of Rotten Tomatoes. All of you who love Saving Christmas, go rate it at Rotten Tomatoes right now and send the message to all critics that we decide what movies we want our families to see. If 2,000 of you out of almost 2 million on this page take a minute to rate Saving Christmas, it will give the film a huge boost and more will see it as a result. Thank you for all your help and support in putting the joy of Christ back in Christmas." Okay.
Now, quick question, Matt. Usually when I see Kirk Cameron holding up fruit, he's about to debunk evolution.
That's right. I'm sure everyone listening to this is familiar with the banana video.
If you're not, go back to the archives of this show. We hit that banana video pretty hard.
Yeah, or just go to YouTube and search Kirk Cameron banana, and you will see something delightful.
I can't wait until we movie fight the banana video as bonus content. That's gonna be a fun time.
They actually raised the rating, the user rating on Rotten Tomatoes, to 94%.
Well, okay.
But then there was a backlash to the backlash.
Right.
And a group of, like, you know, people who don't like the movies, the cinephile types, the people who care about the integrity of Rotten Tomatoes, mm-hmm. pulled the rank back down to where it is now at around 31%. So Kirk Cameron actively tried to boost the online reputation of this movie, and it didn't really work out for him.
Yeah, and I mean, like, look, there is nothing wrong with people who like a movie going and rating it, I think. Like, that's fair, you know?
It gets a little iffy when it gets into campaign territory, though.
Yeah, you know? I think that's the case. Like, kind of have to let it fall where it may. But also, please make sure to rate and review Movie Fighters on iTunes.
Yes.
But only 2 million of you.
Like, imagine if Shia LaBeouf made a Facebook post about going and boosting the rating of Transformers 3, right?
I mean, that does not sound like something that Shia LaBeouf would not do. Like, that seems likely at this point. That could be his next thing.
In fact, it sounds pretty tame for Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah. To be official honest. Movie Fighter's personal enemy, Shia LaBeouf.
Yes, personal enemy of one half of Movie Fighter, Shia LaBeouf.
Hey, Matt, your enemies are my enemies, bro. We ride together, we die together. Bad boys for life.
I appreciate that. So, I don't know what to expect from Saving Christmas. According to the IMDb, aside from Kirk Cameron, I don't recognize anybody in it. The director, who I believe his name is Darren Doan, has a role in it. This is a pretty new movie on DVD as well. It was released into theaters last year in November.
We wanted to do it last year, but it was released theatrically. And that was the line we were not going to cross.
Yeah. It was released on DVD November 3rd of this year. Which seems like a very long time to go between theatrical release and and DVD release. I also know that it was made on a budget of $500,000. So
I bet it's all on the screen, too.
Fairly low budget. I don't know how much more there is to say, Chris. I think we should just dive right into the movie. But before we do...
Well, I do think it's important to note, Matt, like, as always when we get to movies of a religious nature, I think we're both pretty big fans of Christmas.
Yes.
But I am a pretty diehard atheist. I enjoy virtually every Christmas tradition. Trees, lights, presents, Santa, the songs, the hymns. I like the hymns a lot. But I enjoy them all from a very secular perspective.
Yeah.
But as we talked about with the Left Behind movies, like, Kirk Cameron is not a great spokesman for Christianity.
No.
Like, he's not really, like, he does not do a good job of selling anybody on it, I think.
And I think that shows in Christian publications' reaction to his movies.
Yes.
Like, all the reviews that we read of Left Behind from Christian publications were not positive.
Yeah. So just so everybody knows that we're on the same page, we are certainly not going into this movie attacking anyone's religious beliefs.
No, we are not.
We're just kind of reacting to how Kirk Cameron is presenting his
to us. We're not here to bash religion. We're maybe evaluating this as an enticement to a religious belief, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think we're going to be, based on what I've heard, I think we're going to be kind of judging how it all fits together.
Right.
And I feel like it's not going to.
Okay. Now that we have offered up that disclaimer, which I do think is important, it is time for the blockbuster, most popular segment in podcasting, Snack Situation. I hope we're doing Christmas-themed snacks this week. Chris, what are you snacking on?
Oh, Matt. How dare you underestimate me? Now, as I have said, I love participating in holiday traditions. And we are currently recording this, and it's going to be a few days later when you hear it, but we're currently recording this on St. Nicholas Day. It's December 6th. Now, Matt, I know that you, of course, left your shoes out, right?
Of course. Yes.
I left my shoes out. I left out a carrot for St. Nicholas's donkey as he traveled through the Carolinas, as he always does on his feast day. Aiden is currently making bread in the kitchen. She's baking some St. Nicholas bread. Very excited. But because I left my shoes out, because I've been good all year and left out a carrot for the donkey, I have a shoe full of candy. So you can... If you can hear that, that is my shoe full of Reese's Trees, Hershey's Kisses, some Crackle Bars. I never see full-size Crackle Bars. I only see Crackle Bars at Christmas and Halloween.
They're only in the mini size. They only come in the mini size.
Which sucks, because I love Crackle. I mean, I guess it's just Nestle Crunch. It's the full-size Crackle. But
yeah.
Crackle and Mr. Good Bar, I'm pretty stoked about. So I also have a candy cane-shaped thing full of Reese's Pieces, which are my preferred movie theater candy. So I am in... Looking forward to enjoying the bountiful tidings of St. Nicholas Day as we watch this movie.
Chris,
Matt, what's your snack itch?
Can I just take a second to say how much I appreciate that you say Reese's Pieces and not Reese's Pieces, which is the worst pronunciation of a thing?
Okay,
thing. If you say Reese's Pieces, get out of here.
Reese's Pieces rhymes. That is obviously, like... That is obviously why they are called Reese's Pieces, right?
Yeah.
But I do say Reese Cups, and I have since I was a child.
Reese Cups is a little bit more understandable. But Reese's Pieces is mispronouncing both things. I hate it. Okay, my snack. I decided before we started recording that I needed to go to the grocery store and pick something out of the entire section out of the at the front of the store at the grocery store that is right down the street from where I live. There's an entire section full of seasonal things, right? So at Halloween, it's full of Halloween candy. In the summer, it's full of cookout stuff. And at this time of year, it's full of Christmas candies and treats. And I was like, I'm going to pick something out from that section and make it my snack. And my eyes were drawn to a tin of Royal Dansk Danish butter cookies.
Mmm.
A wonderful Christmassy delight. So I have a tin of Danish butter cookies in front of me that I'm going to be enjoying. The last time I encountered one of these tins, I ate the entire thing. That is a story in itself that I may tell at a later date. But for now,
Matt, quick update. While you were giving me your snack sitch, my girlfriend did bring in a slice of the St. Nicholas Day chocolate babka, and it's delicious. Just heads up.
Sounds,
it's delicious.
That sounds wonderful. So, everybody, that's what we're going to be snacking on. If you want to watch Saving Christmas along with us, I do not believe that there's a streaming option for it at the moment. So you will either have to pay for it or get it on DVD and pay for it that way. Otherwise, I assume it will have to be streaming at some point in the near future. But we're going to pause and watch the movie, and we'll be back to talk about it very shortly. And we are back from watching Saving Christmas. And I have to say, this is not the movie I expected. I was expecting like a War on Christmas kind of movie about why saying Happy Holidays is bad. It wasn't that. It was a movie about an intra-Christianity debate about whether everything about the Christmas that is not you. I mean, you said it during the opening, like everything about Christmas that is kind of secular, the Christmas trees, Santa Claus, shopping.
Is it okay to have that stuff?
Is it okay to have that stuff? And
now,
I can describe the whole plot of the movie in a few sentences. So let's just get that out of the way. Okay.
Okay. Go ahead and do that.
Kirk Cameron's brother-in-law is being a grouch at a Christmas party because he doesn't like that Christmas is so focused on the secular stuff. He doesn't like Santa Claus. He doesn't like Christmas trees. He doesn't like all the wasteful spending on gift giving. He asks the question, couldn't we give that money to feed children and help sick people?
Mm-hmm.
He goes out to his car and sits in his car to avoid the Christmas party. Kirk Cameron,
specifically to avoid Kirk Cameron.
Yes. Kirk Cameron comes out to the car, sits in the car with him, and talks with him for a while, and convinces him that everything about Christmas is good from a Christian perspective. So the brother-in-law goes running back into the house, starts talking about how Christmas is actually great, and starts a hip-hop dance party that ends with like a big feast where everybody's sitting around and having fun. That is the entirety of the plot of Saving Christmas.
Matt, can I be real with you for a second? Can I just say something kind of real?
Yes,
before
please.
We go any further? There are times, and this is not a judgment on you. You always perform at your best. But there have been times when I am a little self-conscious about my performance on this show. There are times when I don't feel like I have brought my all, because a lot of the times the movies we watched are really long and they're really boring and they really kind of grind you down. So by the time we come back after what for you has been a 10-second musical break, if that, like, I am exhausted. I just want to go lay down.
Yeah, we've gotten complaints here and there about the show, where people are like, you guys didn't even seem to have watched the movie. We did watch it.
Oh, we watch every movie.
But we're also trying to recount everything from memory with maybe the assistance of a plot summary somewhere.
Yes.
Even though it was a movie we just watched, it is easy to forget things. And I think what we recall and what we forget is actually indicative of the quality of the movie and what sticks with you and what doesn't, and whether the movie is effective and good. Because if it's a good movie, you will remember it. If it's not a good movie, you'll forget everything.
Yes, I think that is 100% the case. But I do think it's a fair complaint. You know, and I've thought, like, maybe we should do, like, other movie podcasts where we don't take that break. Maybe you and I could, like, watch the movie separately, and then our recording sessions wouldn't be too long. Maybe we can do something a little different. But then I thought, you know, but us having high hopes when we go into the movie is such a part of the show.
It is.
And then that twist, that turn when we come back is in my mind, a big part of the show. But it does make for an experience of people, like, just hearing us at our worst, at our most defeated and tired. Not today. I am wide awake and I have a page of notes.
Look, that's why the show is called Movie.
Talk about this.
That's why the show is called Movie Fighters, right? We fight the movie, and then you get the aftermath of the fight, and we struggle. The show is about our struggle with these movies, right? Let me tell you, we struggled with Saving Christmas, but.
Yeah, but I am as fresh today as if I just drank a pot of black coffee.
It was a different struggle than with any movie we've ever had before. Because Saving Christmas is a different movie from anything we've seen before. Because every movie we've watched for Movie Fighters before this has been a traditional movie with a plot and characters and a setting and all of this stuff. Saving Christmas, the IMDb review that calls this a lecture disguised as a comedy is not wrong. This movie is a sermon. And the character of the brother-in-law, whose name is Christian, by the way.
His name is Christian. Christian doesn't like the secular Christmas traditions, everybody. Christian doesn't think they honor Christ enough. Just, like, heads up going into this.
He is a straw man, and Kirk Cameron is there to tear down his straw man arguments against Christmas. And as soon as his arguments get too compelling, he forgets things. For instance, there's a part where he's talking about the Christmas tree and how he doesn't like Christmas trees because they're not part of the Christian tradition. They come from Polish and Scandinavian pagan traditions, which is true, by the way.
Which is true.
Here's how Kirk Cameron gets him on that. Because he's telling Kirk Cameron, tell me in the Bible where there's a Christmas tree. Tell me in the Bible where there's a Christmas tree.
Oh, and Matt, can we save that? Because I want to lay some groundwork before we get into that. Because that might be my second favorite part of the movie.
We'll get to that in a second about what Kirk Cameron's answer to that is. But at first, Kirk Cameron's response to this is to say, when he brings up that Christmas trees were originally a pagan tradition for the solstice. Kirk Cameron says, which gods were they honoring?
He's like, yeah, those are supposed to honor the gods. That's how they worshipped the gods.
And Kirk Cameron gets him because he says, which gods? Which gods? Well, first of all, like, it matters, right?
Yeah.
Second, the guy can't think of Thor.
He calls him Thor Cyrus, which I think is from Amalgam Comics.
So in addition to the plot parts of this movie, there are also these little comedy scenes, which may be the worst thing in the movie.
Yeah, like those are like, oh boy, those are rough going.
I feel like we should knock those out now.
There's a lot of this movie we could talk about non-linearly, because there is no real plot.
We've described the entirety of the plot.
Yeah.
But these little interstitial scenes involve some other people who were at the Christmas party whose relationships to the main characters are not really established in any way.
They're Christian's co-workers, I think. Christian is hosting a Christmas party for his co-workers and his family, and their families, I think.
There's some talk about office stuff. In particular, this one character, whose name is DeAndre, guess what kind of character he is?
Oof.
Is complaining to Christian about how the bosses at their office are getting rid of Crazy Shirt Friday. Okay? The gag of that scene is that he won't stop talking. He's just going on and on and on. And Christian can't get in a word edgewise. DeAndre sure is a talker. There's another scene between DeAndre and another guy who I do not believe is named.
No, he does not. He does not have a name in the film.
He's like a bald guy who they sit around and talk about weird conspiracy stuff, about how getting rid of Crazy Shirt Friday is part of a conspiracy that also
it's
involves...
It's part of the war on Christmas.
That also involves the war on Christmas. And there's a line in there about where the non-DeAndre guy is saying, like, I heard it on Fox News, so you know it's got to be true. Which almost sounds like a weird shot at Fox News. Like, the whole...
Oh, it's totally a weird shot at Fox News.
The whole sequence is like a joke about conspiracy theorists. But I feel like... That's kind of the audience for this movie, because at one point I described the actual main content of this movie, which is all these arguments about why the various trappings of secular Christmas are okay for Christians. It's like InfoWars for Christmas.
It really is. You're so not wrong at all.
It's all these weird tenuous connections. And weird stretching to make everything that's related to Christmas somehow tie into Christianity.
Because the point of the movie is to justify all the secular, non-Christian traditions of Christmas. The tree, the presents, Santa Claus, all of that. All the stuff that like isn't 100% from the Bible is justifying it. And this movie is for an audience that needs a justification for these things. It can't just be... that we have traditions that don't all come directly from Jesus Christ of Nazareth. Like, do these people celebrate Independence Day or Flag Day or anything? Because like
Thanksgiving.
I mean, I guess Thanksgiving does have a biblical connotation, and I guess God gave us Independence Day when we battled the aliens alongside.
But Thanksgiving. Bill. The actual historical tradition of Thanksgiving is an American imperialist tradition, right?
Yes. So like, yes.
Like, not every house. Like, I understand that Christmas is supposed to be, for Christians, a religious holiday, right? But.
And it is. And it totally is.
But I don't think. Like, the thing is, at the very beginning of the movie, we get this 4-minute scene where it's just Kirk Cameron sitting. In a room next to a fireplace.
One of the three introductions of this movie?
That's right. He's sitting in a room next to a fireplace, telling us for 4 minutes about how much he loves Christmas, and how there are two groups of people who are trying to get people who love Christmas to stop. There's one group of people who say, you can love Christmas. It's fine for you to love Christmas, but just don't involve people who don't celebrate it in your celebration.
The way that he puts it, and he hilariously puts it in what I think is the like most reasonable sounding way, is that he says, you can sing your songs, just keep it quiet. You know, don't keep it in your house. Don't get too loud singing your songs, which I think is a reasonable request. If you get too loud singing your songs, that's against the law.
if you get too loud doing anything, a police officer will come to your house and tell you to stop.
Yeah, at the very least, we'll say, hey, knock it off. You have neighbors. There's people trying to sleep. Some people work at night.
At no point does he bring up that, like, not everybody celebrates Christmas. There are people who are of other religions who do not celebrate Christmas.
Oh, yeah, that is never mentioned.
Never mentioned. That,
if you are looking for any acknowledgement that there are religions other than Christianity, other than that maybe the Christmas tree was used to worship Thor Cyrus... then you are in the wrong place,
okay,
my friends.
That's the first group. That is not really the group that's being addressed in this movie. The right. Second group is the group that says that all the various things involved around Christmas that are not specifically about the birth of Jesus are a distraction from the actual religious holiday. And I feel like if you were a religious person... If you are a person who has devoted your life to Christianity, that's reasonable too.
Yes.
To say this. And the end of this movie, at the end of this movie, we were flipping out because
I'm still losing it.
Because there's a big speech at the end about how, you know, you should buy stuff for Christmas. Go out and buy things and have a
huge
feast.
There is a justification for materialism in this that is off the charts insane.
Okay, the justification for materialism is Christmas is about our Lord being born, getting a material body. That's why we celebrate it with material gifts. That's fucking bananas.
That's nuts.
Specifically because, now look, this is not a side of me that often comes out, especially right. in podcasts. I have a sort of an above it all detachment and an intellectualism to the way I like to present myself. And I kind of don't talk about religious stuff that much. I am in a weird place in my religious life. I guess I would consider myself sort of an agnostic, okay? But I grew up around a lot of churchy stuff, okay? I have a very religious family, especially a very religious mother. My brother went to a theology school, okay, and has studied theology. I would love to watch this movie with him. I would love to watch this movie with someone with a theological background, because this thing ties stuff together in such strange ways and with such backwards, bending over backwards justifications that are not biblical. So I still have very strong opinions about like what's biblical and what's not and what Jesus said and how people pervert that, right? Mm-hmm. One of the clearest things that Jesus says in the New Testament is, you can't follow me unless you give away everything you own. Like, you have to give up everything, all material things, and go preach my word.
Yeah, you must be in the world, but not of the world, right? Like, that is a thing.
I bring it up all the time. It is more difficult for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven, right? The right. big celebratory sequence of this movie involves our straw man character Christian walking into his kitchen with two refrigerators and a wine cooler to tell his wife that he's been a jerk.
And then Kirk Cameron says to get out the fancy butter.
He says, get the richest butter. And he talks about like, hey, look, I'm not telling you to max out your credit cards, but buy gifts for people. Invite your neighbors, your friends, your coworkers. At no point does he say, help the poor. We talked about the question that Christian brings up where he says, like, shouldn't we be helping poor people? Shouldn't we be spending the money that we spend on toys that kids don't play with 3 weeks later? Couldn't we be spending that to help the sick or feed people who need to be fed? That question is never addressed or answered.
Never addressed or answered. Never brought up. Okay. Obviously, I am pro the celebratory aspect of Christmas. I am in favor of the celebratory aspect of Christmas. That's why I love it so much. And I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, having a feast if you can. I don't think there's anything wrong with buying people nice things, like spending money to show the people in your life that you value them. Like, I think presents are a big part of Christmas for me. I don't think there's anything wrong with any of these traditions. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with bringing a tree into the house and putting lights on it because it's pretty and it's something that you don't usually have. Like, I am very in favor of all these Christmas traditions. The way they are talked about in this movie mystifies me.
The most mystifying thing to me is that there's an implied message of fuck charity.
Yes, it's so unbelievably capitalist. It is overwhelmingly capitalist in a way that is bonkers.
There's a part in here where Kirk Cameron is talking about like famous Christmas haters, right?
Oh god, this made me so mad.
And he calls Ebenezer Scrooge Uncle Scrooge.
Uncle Scrooge is a duck.
Yeah. But he's talking about,
he says, you can choose whether to be Tiny Tim or Uncle Scrooge.
That's right.
Uncle Scrooge is a duck.
Yes. He says, Tiny Tim does this and Uncle Scrooge does this. First of all, the whole point of that fucking story is that Ebenezer Scrooge becomes someone who loves Christmas, right?
Yeah. If you're being a Scrooge, you're being someone who didn't used to like Christmas and is now totally into Christmas, by the way. Heads up.
But the other thing is, he hated charity. He wouldn't give anything to anybody, right?
Yeah. Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses?
And that's the ultimate message of this movie. Keep to yourself, invite your friends and your family, and give presents to your kids who already have things. Don't worry about other people who need stuff. It's crazy!
We've talked about on Ajax in our Christmas specials in years past. We've talked about how I think it's, and maybe I think this because I live in the middle of South Ass Carolina, but I think it's so ridiculous that there are, you know, so many like modern songs and like the chunk of the evangelical movement that thinks that there's not enough Jesus in Christmas, where it's like you're not hearing about him enough. Because I can assure you, you hear about Jesus a lot at this time of year. Like, Jesus's PR is great.
Yeah.
Like, there are, but you know, as we have said, there are plenty of buildings where you can go and for free, they will tell you all about him. Yeah. You can get Bibles for free if you want. But I also think that it is understandable and reasonable for a religious person to think that Christmas is a little too commercial, and to think that if you are celebrating it as a religious holiday, that the focus should be on the religious aspects of it. Now, in all fairness, I think that Easter is the better Christian religious holiday, right? Because Easter is the death and the resurrection. Like, that's the more important thing than the birth.
In theological terms, it is the more important event.
Christmas has kind of become this, it's my whole thing, like, as an atheist, like, I have the weird perspective that Christmas is for everybody, right? Like, you know, Santa Claus is for everybody, like, all the secular Christmas stuff. But, like, there is still an undeniable religious aspect that is going along fine. If you think Christmas is too commercial, that's a reasonable debate to have. Not in this movie.
Not at all. Okay, so let's talk about the three main points.
Well, first, I want to talk about this introduction. This movie is 79 minutes long.
Yeah.
It starts with a 4-minute and 15-second introduction, and there are 10 minutes of credits. There's also a dance number at the end.
And there's a long opening credit sequence, too. We observed that the movie proper doesn't start about until 8 minutes, 20 seconds into the movie.
Yes.
There is less than an hour of actual movie.
Yes, and the production is terrible. It's all, like, free fonts. It's all, like, sounds like royalty-free music. There is a soundtrack album, so presumably some of the songs in here were performed by actual bands, but a lot of the incidental music, Matt, you pointed out, it sounds a lot like the music from Big Money Hustlers.
So much of this movie reminds me of the ICP movie OVRA. It's amazing. Like, because there's the incidental music, right? I mean, in addition to the ska opening credits music and the sort of like weird Dropkick Murphys music when Christian has his change of heart, like there's a lot of like background music that's kind of like bum bum chim bum bum chim bum 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 chim, like something out of an ICP movie. If ICP had a Christmas movie, it would sound like that. The background.
How do they music. Not? By the way, how do they not have a Christmas movie?
Maybe one day we'll get that. But
oh, did we talk about how Christian's last name is White, by the way? His name is White Christian.
The other thing that reminds me of ICP is the sense of humor of this movie. At several points throughout the movie, Chris, you asked the question, is this all improvised? Because there's a very improvised feel to it. Anytime Christian is speaking, he takes a lot of really long pauses between his words. Like, he's trying to think of what to say. There's a lot of, like, it doesn't feel very scripted. The little comedy scenes between DeAndre and the other people just feel like they're coming up with whatever on the fly. But the idea of somebody being kind of stuttery, which Christian is a lot, or, like, kind of, like, putting their hands over their face, or like, kind of subtly mocking someone. Like, there's a part where Christian is mocking a child. Mm-hmm. That feels like all the jokes in every Insane Clown Posse movie. The only difference is that this cuts out all the sex jokes from the ICP movies. But beyond that, the sense of humor is shockingly similar.
There was a part in this movie where Christian is telling Kirk Cameron. Christian, by the way, is the director and one of the writers of the movie. Yep. So, and he looks like Marc Maron, if you're curious.
He's really tall. There's one shot where he and Kirk Cameron's sister, who is not actually Candace Cameron, she's an actress, who may be rather short, are standing next to each other, and I swear she's half his height.
Yes. Yes. But there's a part where he goes out of the car, and he's basically telling Kirk Cameron what set him off, like what made him not like Christmas. And he's like, yeah, you know, I was driving around and I saw this little girl, and her mom had armfuls of shopping bags and was obviously shopping, and the girl was really upset and crying. So whatever she wants for Christmas, she's not getting, which, by the way, is not how Christmas works. Like, what she wants for Christmas is probably in that bag, and the girl saw it in the store. Anyway, you don't need me to explain that part. The point is, he tells this. It's a long scene. It's like an 8-minute scene, and this monologue that he gives is a big part of it. And it is said with the seriousness and gravitas of a veteran talking about his best friend dying in his arms. Like, it is, like, he is trying to muster up so much seriousness. He's like, I was driving, and, you know, the lights were up at the stores, and, There was a little girl, and she was crying. She was really upset, you know, just mom. Her mom was with her. Had arms full of bags. She'd been shopping. But that's how it goes.
And that is not actually exaggerating the amount of air between the sentences or between the phrases.
I kept them short so that you wouldn't think I was done.
He added he took so long to say a sentence. Okay, I think we can lead into now kind of the three main points.
Now, Matt, I do not want to go through these in chronological order as they are presented in the movie. I want to go to them in ascending order of me writing capital letters and question marks on this page of notes. So I think we should talk about the nativity scene.
Okay, the nativity scene is actually the first one they talk about.
Right, that's the first one. Then I think we need to talk about Santa Claus, and then I think we need to talk about the Christmas tree.
Okay, so these are the three main points of discussion that they have in the car, even though these are not all the problems that Christian has with Christmas. They're just the ones that they decided to have a segment about for whatever reason.
Right.
Like, there's not a segment about presents.
There is, though. There is at the very end.
At the end. But there's not, like, a scene of convincing Christian that presents are okay. There's just a
monologue at the end about how you should, you know, celebrate through material goods, our Lord becoming material.
Okay, so in the car, Christian is talking about how all this stuff is so bad and things are so consumerist and we're not focused on Jesus enough. And Kirk Cameron just looks at him, and in the smuggest fucking way you could imagine, he looks at him and goes, "You're all wrong." No, he goes, "It's all wrong." And Christian goes, "Yeah, I know, it's all wrong. It's all wrong that things are so consumerist and bad." And Kirk Cameron goes, No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you're all wrong. You've got all this all wrong." And Christian is incredulous for a second, and eventually he goes, "Okay, all right. Let's just start on this, because I think we can probably agree on this. In my house, there's a huge tree. There are nutcrackers. Santa Claus is in there. There's a bunch of stuff. And in the very corner, in a very small corner on a table, there's a tiny little snow globe with a nativity scene in it. And that is all we see of the nativity scene." And Kirk Cameron goes, "I got some things to say about that." And it leads into a sequence where Kirk Cameron doesn't even refute the point that the nativity scene isn't central enough. In fact, his argument is that the nativity scene should be central. He makes some weird side point about how the entire nativity is important, not just the baby Jesus in the middle, but all the other characters around.
Yeah, and specifically, it's a nativity snow globe, And one of Christian's points in his clearly improvised problem with it is that the nativity should have a bigger place of importance in the house and not just be something that you pick up and shake and there's, you know, snow in it that falls down because that's weird, which Kirk Cameron never addresses. This is not a real debate. They wrote this movie.
Yeah.
They could have had him bring up other points.
Well, Christian also brings up the point that Jesus wasn't really born in December. Like, all the stuff about the pagan origins of Christmas. None of that is ever really refuted or shot down. There's just a lot of symbolic reasoning given for, like, oh, we celebrate in December because it's a time where it's the coldest and the darkest, and it represents a turnaround to a time of warmth and light.
Which is why, also, there is a winter holiday in other religions. Like, that is the origins of stuff like Saturnalia.
That's what the solstice
celebration.
That's what the winter solstice is all about, right?
Like, no, Matt, that's not what the winter solstice is all about. Because last time I checked, God created the winter solstice. Boom.
That's
a point from the movie. That's a line from the movie. Last time I checked, God created the winter solstice.
Yes, that's word for word. But the ultimate point of the nativity discussion is that, which comes out of nowhere, is that the swaddling clothes that Jesus was wrapped in are representative of the burial shrouds that Jesus was wrapped in when he was buried. And we're supposed to connect the clothes that he was born, that he was put in after he was born, to the clothes that he left from when he resurrected. And there's supposed to be, like, a really beautiful symbolic connection between those two things. There's also the point brought up that the reason that the wise men brought frankincense and myrrh to the baby Jesus is because those are burial spices. Like, you know, things you would use to embalm somebody thousands of years ago for burial. And that's supposed to be symbolic of the burial that would be to come later. Almost as if, like, hey, maybe don't take everything literally, because it's a story, and things are going to connect together at the end. That's kind of the point of this whole thing, and does not address, like, Christian's point at all. It just makes some weird side point about symbolism and cloths.
Yeah. Everything is symbolic, but everything is also literally true. And I wanted to save this for the end because there's this weird discussion of stories. It's where the Uncle Scrooge thing comes from. But there's this weird discussion of, like, stories and how, you know, we're all part of God's story. I think we're supposed to believe that, you know, God constructed reality in the way that a writer would construct a story, in that there's, like, foreshadowing and symbolism. But since it's reality, also everything is also literally true, which is so difficult to get your head around.
Yeah.
Like, it's all over the map. Like, this discussion of swaddling clothes and the burial shroud comes out of nowhere and makes no sense.
And it doesn't address any of Christian's problems with Christmas.
Yeah.
It just reaffirms his assertion that the nativity scene should be more prominent.
Yes.
Like, yeah, like, they agree on that point.
Which is a stated problem with it.
Yeah, they agree on that point. It's so weird, and it's the first discussion.
It's the first discussion. So, like, we're starting out with, like... Like, and Christian just goes, like, at the end of it, he goes, like, wow, I had never thought about the swaddling clothes and the burial shroud. That's a... Like, wow, that's a really good point. Like, he never goes, yeah, so we agree that the nativity should not be over in a corner behind a bunch of other decorations, right?
Yeah.
Like, the nativity scene should be prominent. We agree on that. Like, okay. Instead, Kirk Cameron gets to look smug and right, which is a pattern in all of his movies.
Okay, that leads into the second point of discussion about the Christmas tree. And we'll get to... the actual explanation of the Christmas tree in a second. But I guess we're going to skip ahead to the third point of discussion, which is Santa Claus.
Yes. Now, this, if you if this is not your first time listening to Movie Fighters or to me in general, you'll know that I'm a Santa fan. I'm a Santa guy. I love some Santa Claus. So I was curious as to how this movie would approach Santa. And I gotta say, of everything that is discussed, this is the best and most compelling. It is, however, also completely nuts.
Okay, so unlike The Christmas Tree, Christian does not ask what the biblical basis for Santa Claus is. Because he's a straw man and he doesn't have to do that.
He does actually. He says, "What's, you know, where's Santa Claus in the Bible?" And Kirk Cameron just, you know, like admits that Santa is not in the Bible.
Okay, I take that back then. So there's just like a, no, Santa Claus is not in the Bible. But there's like a little thing where it's like, okay, where does Santa Claus fit in with Jesus? And Kirk Cameron's reaction to that is to not give a biblical story. It is to give the actual historical story of St. Nicholas.
Semi.
Well, or at least a part of it. Like a certain sliver of the St. Nicholas story that particularly fits in with his rhetorical goals, right?
Yes.
And he presents St. Nicholas. Okay, first of all, he leads into talking about St. Nicholas in a, like, well, if I was going to tell this story in a real historical sense, then everybody would be wearing, like, clerical robes and swinging around decanters, right? But let's not do it that way. Let's think about it in a more of a Lord of the Rings perspective. What he actually means is a Game of Thrones perspective, because the Santa Claus in the historical flashbacks in this movie looks like fucking Khal Drogo from Game of Thrones. Like, he's not as ripped as Jason Momoa, but, like, he's got, like, a big, like, severe beard, and he's always got a scowl on his face, and he's holding, like, a big, you know, cane with a crook on the end. And he's supposed to look like a badass. Like the yeah, whole,
which he does.
The whole point of this sequence is to make St. Nicholas a badass.
Yeah, like, there is a, like, it is introduced as, the phrase he says is, Santa Claus was a bad dude. And I mean bad as in good. Or bad as in cool, or something like that. So what we're given is a very brief and historically inaccurate summary of the Council of Nicaea, which, as you may remember, is where there was a big debate over whether Jesus was God on earth or simply the Son of God and was not himself divine, which is known today as the Arian heresy because it was spread by Arius. Arius is in this segment played by the conspiracy theorist who talks about there being fluoride in the water, and he saw it on Fox News, so you know it's true. So I do think there is a nice weird thematic connection there that they made the conspiracy theorist into the guy, you know, trying to convince people that Jesus was not himself divine.
DeAndre is also in the scene listening to Arius.
Okay. Okay. So maybe that's why the conspiracy scene is in there?
I think we may be ascribing way more intent to that than there was, but maybe.
Now, what – historically, this is true. This is a true historical fact about St. Nicholas that you may not know. St. Nicholas of Myra got so angry at Arius that during the Council of Nicaea, at which the Emperor of Rome was present, he got up, walked across the floor, and slapped Arius in the face. He was then – and that is where – that is the story told in the flashback scene that we get, except for that St. Nicholas beats the shit out of Arius, and it's actually kind of great.
And as soon as, like, and it's set to dubstep.
Yes. As soon as Kirk Cameron's like, yeah, you know, he was so consumed with rage that he would defame the Lord that he smote him on the cheek. And then, like, there's a dubstep drop, and St. Nicholas starts beating the hell out of Arius. It's great.
He actually throws him out of the building.
Yes, he throws him out of the building. Now, moving from history to Catholic doctrine, What then happened was that St. Nicholas was imprisoned, because you cannot punch someone in the face in front of the Emperor of Rome, even if you are a bishop, and then escaped from jail when the Virgin Mary and the baby Jesus visited him and took the chains off of him and opened the cell. That is one of his miracles for which he was canonized. He also resurrected some children and it did a lot of great stuff. Ask Benito. You know, wait till Halloween till he's back on Rocket Ajax and he'll tell you all about it. In the movie version, because this is a Protestant movie and not a Catholic movie, because Catholicism cannot be like really directly referenced or mentioned, because this is an American Protestant evangelical Christian movie.
At most, you can talk about bishops and saints, but that's it.
You can. Catholicism is never mentioned. The Catholic Church is never mentioned. St. Nicholas is just apparently a wandering servant of God. What happens is that Kirk Cameron's like, yeah, people were so stoked about Nicholas of Myra, like defending Jesus's honor, that they started calling him a saint, Saint Nicholas. And I'm like, that's not how we get saints, but okay.
Yeah, that's not how canonization works.
And then in the movie, like the flashback is set up with this like serving girl coming to him and being like, he's here. And Nicholas is like, where? And she's like, here, in the tavern. And Nicholas goes, bring me my coat. He goes back, and all of a sudden, like, the serving girl is, like, sassy. She's like, did you get it out of your system? You good? You good? Let's go bless some children. And then St. Nicholas gets this huge, terrifying smile and goes, you're right. Let's go bless some children. And immediately goes from punching out Arius to distributing toys to the children.
To being Santa Claus. There's a shot of a sleigh with a red Santa Claus costume on it.
Yeah, there is no... Like, there is... According to Kirk Cameron, there is no step between St. Nicholas and modern Coca-Cola-ass Santa Claus.
In Turkey, in central Turkey, there is a sleigh.
Because it's snowing in central Turkey.
Yeah.
In this Lord of the Rings flashback. Like, there is nothing in between. He just says, yeah, in Germany they called him Santa Claus, and that became Santa Claus. And I'm like, that's not... But I will say, I would watch the hell out of this dude being St. Nicholas and his sassy teen girl sidekick rolling around the 8th century. That would be great.
And at the end of all of that, Kirk Cameron turns to Christian and says, so you know what? The Christian who is fighting for the faith, the person that you want to be, that's who Santa Claus is. Which I will say is the most compelling argument in the movie.
Yes.
Now, like, modern day gift giving comes on Christmas Eve, 'twas the night before Christmas, Santa Claus is not that guy at all.
No, not at all that guy. Not at all that guy.
But if you want to believe that, and if you want to say, like, well, look, I don't know that I like modern Santa Claus, modern consumerist Santa Claus, but he is based on someone who defended the divinity of Christ, then fine. That if that is what makes you okay with Santa Claus, then fine.
Yeah, it's like, but I mean, it's presented so strangely, that part of the movie. It's such a bizarre presentation to make Santa Claus okay. Like, that you have to tell kids that, like, Mall Santa and his elves are going to probably, like, you know, after you sit on his lap, get your picture taken, tell him you want a Power Rangers toy and Optimus Prime for Christmas, like, that he might just, like, wander over to some heretics and start, like, laying down the law.
Yeah, there's going to be a guy dressed as Arius in the food court, and he's going to smash his face into a table at the fucking Sbarro.
I swear to God, if we start that tradition, I'm all in. If we start, like, bringing back, like, Mall Arius, yes.
Let's do that. Let's start that. Okay.
Oh.
But the insanity of the Santa Claus presentation is nothing compared to the section about Christmas trees.
The section about Christmas trees is 1,000,000% bananas.
Okay. Christian is like, okay, so you got me on the nativity scene. But what about the Christmas tree? Okay, tell me where in the Bible it says that you should have a Christmas tree. Like, is it in, I don't know, I've read Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, but maybe I'm missing something from, like, Deuteronomy, Leviticus, Numbers. Like, he's naming off all these Old Testament books.
What obscure book of the Bible? What obscure chapter and verse? What little known obscure part of the Bible are you going to tell me the Christmas tree comes from?
Is it in Zechariah? Like, he's naming off Old Testament books, which would have nothing about a Christmas tree, right? And right. Kirk Cameron with this goddamn smug fucking smile on his face. He's so smug in this movie. Like, we thought he was smug and Left Behind. It's nothing compared to this.
He's as bad, maybe worse in this movie than
I would say worse. I would say worse. Well,
specifically in the you know, you're a sinner scene in Left Behind.
Yeah, that it's on par with that. So he turns to Christian and he just has a smug ass smile on his face and he goes, Genesis.
And I started clapping my hands and getting excited because I knew we were about to get something that was completely straight up crazo.
Here's his argument, as best as I can describe it. When God created the world, he decorated trees with fruit and other adornments, flowers, whatever. There were also two trees in the Garden of Eden, the tree of knowledge, the tree of life. Adam took fruit off the tree of knowledge and ate it, creating sin. The only way that he can repay for that sin,
because when you steal something, you have to give it back, right? Yes. Like, we all know that is the punishment for stealing, is you have to give it back.
He could not replace the fruit because he ate the fruit and the fruit became part of him. Therefore, he would have to put himself on the tree. Who put himself on a tree? Jesus.
That's right. That's right. That's it. That's why we have Christmas trees.
The Christmas tree is a cross.
Uh-huh.
The end. Also, there's an insane portion where Kirk Cameron is talking about the Garden of Eden as being a Christmas tree lot. At no point, like, okay, the whole notion that it being an evergreen tree, okay, the only thing that is mentioned about it being an evergreen tree is that it's an evergreen tree, which is a symbol of life and eternity, right? Which can kind of tie into stuff about Jesus. But the stuff about it being an evergreen tree that is, like, you know, not a chestnut tree or other adornments that were in the original temple or other, like, biblical trees, not really brought up. Anything about the original German tradition of Christmas trees, which I should note, only certain Christians abided by, while other Christians thought it was idolatry. Nothing about that original Christian tradition of Christmas trees is brought up. Nothing about the pagan tradition of holiday trees, of solstice trees, is brought up. It's just, there was a tree in the Garden of Eden. Jesus died on a cross. Christmas trees.
I wrote down the sentence because during this scene, I was rapid fire texting because I could not believe what I was hearing. The sentence I wrote down was a decorated tree covered in lights in the house. That's God's idea. That's God's idea is the worst. Like, because everything then is God's idea, right?
This part especially, like, it's kind of true throughout the movie, but this part especially is very intent on, without biblical backup, without citation.
Any textual support.
No textual support whatsoever. Saying what God wants, what God desires, and what God is saying.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the textbook definition of blasphemy?
It's close. It's certainly close.
Look, I'm no theologian. I'm no cleric. I do not have a degree from a divinity school. I do not necessarily, I'm not the authority on what is blasphemy. But ascribing something that you pulled out of your ass.
which is admittedly what happens in this movie, as we'll get to in a second.
To God himself. Doesn't seem right.
Yeah. Like, it's... I am not a religious man. If I ask someone what the... If I was unfamiliar with the Christmas tree, and I asked someone, if I was familiar with the Bible but unfamiliar with the Christmas tree, and I asked, hey, what's the deal with that tree with all the pretty lights and ornaments on it that you put in the corner at Christmas time? And somebody said, oh, that represents the cross upon which Jesus died. I would think that is like bananas levels of blasphemy.
Well, and look, to make this argument at all, you had to have Christian forget which gods the original pagan trees celebrated. As if that matters. But it's a way of sweeping the pagan history of Christmas trees under the rug so that you can make these weird, tenuous InfoWars connections to the cross and the Christmas tree.
Yeah. And you know what? This also adds a weird middleman, because you know what we have if you want to like have something that symbolizes Jesus's sacrifice upon the cross? We have crucifixes. Crucifixes exist. Lots of people have them in their houses.
Yeah, like they're a big deal at Easter, right? Like,
you do not need a symbol for another symbol. you do. Like, hey, what does this orange triangle represent? Oh, well, that represents a stop sign, which represents stop. Like, that is not how things work.
All right, so those are the three main points that Christian gets in the car. And this leads Christian to run into his house, burst through the doors, go sliding into Christmas presents, jump onto the couch where Santa is sitting, get a bunch of pictures with Santa, and seem like he's walking into his kitchen with two refrigerators and a wine cooler to tell his wife that he wants to fuck her.
Yes.
There's even a part where the wife goes like, or he goes, you know what I want to give you this Christmas? And the wife goes, what is it, Big Daddy? Which is like the start of a porn scene. And then it stops, and there's some voiceover from Kirk Cameron where it's like, what would you do if you were writing this scene? Where would you want this to go? Would you want it to be just like a cliche where he plants the big kiss on her? Because, you know what? That's not what we're going to do. So then the movie starts playing back, and he says, like, I made a hip-hop mix for you, and we're going to do a dance party. And then we skipped the dance party.
A hip-hop dance routine.
Yeah, and then we skipped the hip-hop dance routine.
We invoked there is a clause in the Movie Fighters rulebook where we are allowed to skip a musical number that is going to have no bearing on the plot if and only if it is a majority white people hip-hop dance number.
Yes. I mean,
going by that Street Fighter fan film
that we watched, we actually can invoke skipping over parts of a movie with very little prompting. But
yes, but like we had to skip part of a 79-minute movie. Just a heads up. But Matt, you glossed over a very important part of the movie. You talked about how he slid into Christmas presents. He like slip and slides. He like goes down on his stomach and slides in.
Yeah,
and then we get another voiceover from Kirk Cameron being like, look at the presents from down on the floor. Don't they look like the skyline of a city?
Oh, yeah.
That's right. This is the New Jerusalem, and at its center, a Christmas tree. And I was like, what is happening? Now it's just like things that look like things. I am losing it, Matt.
Like, the takeaway from this movie is Christmas is whatever the fuck you want it to be.
What I wanted to get to.
If you want everything to symbolize Jesus, that's fine. Just go ahead and do it. Come up with whatever bullshit justification you need to do that, and just do it.
Yeah, which, is what, like, textually in the movie that is said. Like I said, there's kind of a framing sequence, not really a framing sequence, but it's, you know, voiceover narration at the beginning and end. It's all about stories and how we used to tell our kids certain stories and they got cleaned up. Maybe it's time to tell the real stories and tell new stories to your kids. And at the end of it, Kirk Cameron's like, yeah, tell new stories to your kids. Like, start new explanations for things. Like, he straight up says, yeah, I'm making it up. Like, I'm just telling people that the Christmas tree is the cross and the presents are the New Jerusalem and the Nutcracker is one of King Herod's soldiers, by the way. That was something that just gets thrown in at the very end of the movie.
Let's do high points and low points. Chris, are there any high points of Saving Christmas? I think I know what your one high point is going to be.
The dubstep St. Nicholas Arias drop. Yeah. Is pretty great, and like Santa's sassy serving wench sidekick.
Yeah, that may be the only good part of the movie.
Like Saint Nicholas beating up Arias and then coming back to a Dragon Age extra, like a minor Dragon Age character going, "You get it out of your system? You good? You done beating up heretics today, Nicholas?" Like, it's almost great. Like, it's almost what I want Christmas to be in Thetis.
All right, I think that's it for high points. What about low points? I think we've already described them all.
Kirk Cameron doesn't know anything about Christmas.
He doesn't know that
Uncle Scrooge is not Ebenezer Scrooge. He doesn't know the words to Santa Claus is coming to town.
There's a part where he...
I lost my fucking mind!
Yeah, there's a part where he is reciting the lyrics to Santa Claus that is coming to town to Christian, and he gets them fucking wrong.
He says, "You better watch out. You better not pout."
That's not the words. It's not, "You better watch out. You better not pout."
He does it again too. Like, I don't remember what exactly he fucks up in the bridge, but he's like, he doesn't get, he sees you when you're sleeping and knows when you're awake. I think he says he knows when you are sleeping. He sees when you're awake. It's not the, like, that is a very well-known song. Bruce Springsteen covered it. It was a hit.
It's a very long cover of that song.
Cameron doesn't know shit about Christmas and is making shit up.
At one point, I would have said that the lighting in this movie is okay. But you know what? It's not. It's a really shoddily fucking made movie. It's like, there's a lot of like weird trickery. Like, there's a part where they start talking about Santa where Kirk Cameron is asking Christian to visualize Santa. And, like, the Santa that is at the Christmas party, it's, like, a weird straight-on shot of him, and there's kind of, like, weird video effects around him to look evil. Everything about this movie feels like kind of a slickly made YouTube video or a political ad. Like, the parts where Kirk Cameron, for some reason, goes on an extended tear about the manger and how the manger must have been a rock and how the stable wasn't really a wood stable. It was probably a cave, because I think it's a way to connect it to the tomb from the resurrection story. But that whole set is shot with these like holes in the cave, and the only light coming in are these weird spotlights coming in through the holes in the cave. So there's just these shafts of light, and it's supposed to be a cool lighting effect, but instead it's really distracting and weird. Like, all the things that are supposed to make it look like kind of a slickly made movie just make it look like a, like, kind of like all the thought that goes into a political ad is about the extent of the thought into the, like, the shots, like, Or like a bad music video. Like, when Christian bursts into the house, there's these spotlights behind him, so it just looks like he's in a studio. Like, everything just looks like it's in a studio.
I saw a Vine about anime last night that was better edited and lit than this.
Yeah, and when he goes sliding into the Christmas presents, like, it's in this weird slow-mo where it's supposed to look cool, but you can tell that they're just vamping for time. Like, even the Santa Claus part that we like, so much of it is so fucking slow. Like, when Santa Claus is walking into town to go to the tavern to fight Arias, like, there's a shot of him putting his hand around his cane, and it just takes so long, and none of it looks like it isn't shot in the middle of a goddamn tiny little studio somewhere. It's just, it's a lot of effort, I can tell, went into making this look like a professional movie, and it does not happen.
Nothing means anything. Words and symbols have no meaning in this movie. Presents are Jerusalem, and, like, materialism is great. Like, the weird justification for materialism is, an assaultively capitalist film.
That it's is offensive. A low point for me. It's yes. Offensive.
Like, look, I get it. You know, we live in a capitalist society, and everything has to be filtered through that lens, but Jesus.
Yeah, literally Jesus. Like, again, back to the blasphemy point, like saying, like, Jesus wants you to be materialistic because he had a material body, that is 100% counter to the red words in the Bible.
Yes. First of all, it's a weird, unnecessary justification. Like, if you... we're getting into final thoughts at this point.
We are now in final thoughts.
This is a movie for people who need everything to be justified through the lens of a very specific form of Christianity that does a terrible job of justifying anything. Even the most cogent argument in the film is still that we are honoring a Catholic saint. We are honoring the life and works of a Catholic saint.
Who we can't call Catholic.
Right.
And we have to say he became a saint because people said so.
Yeah. People did say so, but there's, like, a very specific group of people who make that decision.
Yeah, and there's a very specific process for that to happen.
There's a very specific building in which it happens. Look, I love Christmas traditions, but, like, you know, you don't need to make the Christmas tree the cross upon which Jesus died in order to have a Christmas tree. You don't need to for Jesus to tell you capitalism is okay to buy someone a Christmas present. But apparently Kirk Cameron does.
And also fuck charity.
Yeah. It's such a weird thing of so many Christmas traditions are secular, but I like them. But I like doing them.
So I have to come up with reasons to like them.
Yeah. Where does it stop? Did Jesus say, "Lo, and unto you on Tuesdays, tacos shall be eaten"? Like, no, you can just have Taco Tuesday. You can have pizza on Friday.
If you want to like something, just like it.
Yes.
Like, you don't have to, like, not everything has to have a justification. Just like it.
It doesn't have to all be a fight. Just put up the tree, sing a song.
And the perceived audience for this movie being other Christians who are on the fence about whether or not they can do these things at Christmas makes it really weirdly focused. Like, it's for a weirdly narrow audience.
Yeah.
So seeing it from a somewhat outsider perspective makes it even stranger. I don't think there's a question about whether or not we would recommend this movie. The answer is clearly no.
I do not regret watching it. I do not feel like we wasted the time, even though the movie, like, I would never recommend the movie itself.
I feel like there's only about half an hour worth of content in the movie, though.
Oh, yeah. It's like, you could trim this movie down. You could basically Vine this movie. This movie could be an Instagram video. Like, hey, I'm Christian, but I want to celebrate some non-biblical Christmas traditions. That's fine.
Exactly. There you go. Like, you don't have to set up this straw man and give him a bunch of bullshit reasons for why Santa's okay. Or a Christmas tree's okay.
Yeah, like, because, like, do you, like, is the argument that if you are unknowingly worshiping Thorcyrus by having a Christmas tree in your house, then you are actually, like, what is the argument? I don't understand this movie's central argument or its point or its support for its argument at all. I don't understand it. I don't get it.
The question I was leading to is this officially the worst movie we've watched from Movie Fighters? I think your answer's no.
Oh, no, no. This is not the worst movie.
Myra Breckinridge is still worse.
This is not the worst Kirk Cameron movie we've watched from Movie Fighters.
Yeah, that second Left Behind movie is pretty rough.
Pretty rough.
pretty like, rough.
This is not the worst Christmas movie, but it is maybe the most inexplicable. Like, it is the movie I have the most questions about.
And the preachiest. Among movies that we've watched that have a lot of preachy elements about them, this one is preachy in an absolute literal sense, to the point where you are being preached to. There are voiceover parts that are a sermon. It is preachy by definition.
Yeah, but it is, like, I mean, no, I'll sit through this one 10 more times before I will watch half an hour of Myra Breckinridge.
All right, and that is going to be our conclusion on Saving Christmas. We're going to be back in 2 weeks with a movie that I think we might have, I hope, we might have a little more fun with.
I don't know, like I said, this one woke me up. I was ready to go when the credits rolled.
I don't know how this one's going to turn out, but we are going to be watching the... Last year we watched a Miz Christmas movie, and this year we're going to be watching a Miz Christmas movie. We're going to be watching Santa's Little Helper with Mike the Miz Mizanin and WWE Diva Paige. So come back in 2 weeks as we watch that. See if we like it better than the other Miz movie that we watched. Until then, our music is by Michael Kill. Our website was designed by Sean Bogus. We'll see you soon, everybody.
Merry Christmas, everybody. And don't forget, Uncle Scrooge is a duck.
This has been a Clytus Media production.